The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set against the Texas Rangers, winning two games out of three. They now stand at 63-56 on the season. They are in third place in the American League East and two games out of a wild card spot. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamond. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing good. Coming off an absolutely awful loss, though, so this could have been a way better podcast coming up, but losing the third one always stinks.
It's another just kick in the shins, you know, on the way to a sweep, but didn't quite get there. I dealt with the same thing last week, too, so yep. It's a curse of the midweek show, it seems like. And if folks want to find you on Twitter, where they can find
You can find me on Twitter at ndiamondmedia, just spelled N, and then the diamond, like the shape, and then media.
Awesome. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
What a roller coaster. What an interesting week to be a Red Sox fan. All sorts of developments with all sorts of implications. I can be found at Cushman MLB, the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. We're on Instagram. Check our Substack blog. Our most recent one was our reaction to the Jaren Duran thing. We'll have more on that on the Clown Takes episode, kind of indirectly. I meant to mention this on the early week rotation, but forgot. We did have a Clown Takes episode, maybe a couple weeks ago, and someone gave us a terrible review, and it wasn't even accurate. They said we went after Duran, and we're not a Jaren Duran podcast, when the reality was that we were responding to somebody's hot take, and it was the hot taker from social media that had said that, and we got a bad review. Since then, we've got four really good ones, and we don't get a ton of those, maybe a couple a month, but when you guys do that, it helps us out because it makes us a lot more visible on those apps. So even the bad reviews help you. If people are talking about you on those apps, it helps, but we definitely appreciate the good reviews, so I meant to mention that earlier in the week. So thank you to those that took the time to do that.
Yeah, that random bad review we got was one of those moments where context is important. Because, I don't think anyone on this show is saying that we want Jaren Duran demoted or, you know, cut from the team or anything like that.
And
so,
even after the controversy, I mean, none of us condone what he said, but we're still very much, you know, big fans of Jaren Duran.
Right. Absolutely. And yeah, so like you said, interesting week for the Red Sox. It's never drama free with this team. Even, you know, the last game of that series, you're on your way to a sweep. You got a 7-4 lead and boom, you know, bullpen comes in, blows it up, and that's it. And it's one of those feelings again where, yeah, they won the series. We should be feeling good. They're winning 2 out of 3. That's all we can ask them at this moment. You know, they're waiting for guys to get back, and they're without Jaren Duran for the first two games. So we keep saying it, just keep winning series, keep gaining ground, and hopefully you end, you know, in a wild card spot. But that last game is just such a kick in the balls because you should have had a sweep. You should have had a sweep, and the bullpen continues to melt down at key moments. You know, that plus the Duran thing, plus, you know, is Casas going to be back this weekend or not? We don't know. He's kind of a wild card. So I guess, Nick, I'll start with you. Like, you know, 2 out of 3 is good, but are you still feeling a little bit iffy about the way things are going right now?
I'm definitely feeling iffy, especially with the defensive problems we had today with up the middle with Hamilton, and Rafaela kind of had a bad throw in the 9th. I know he came in there because of Nick Sogard's injury, which we don't know a lot about right now, but there's been tons of errors. We had base running errors with Devers and Duran today. Duran took off very late on a ball in the dirt and he was out by a mile. Devers forgot how many outs there are. These are guys that cannot happen, especially with Duran coming off a suspension. He needs to be making every play, being at the top of his game. He cannot get thrown out there. Actually thought he should have been stealing first pitch right there in that situation in the beginning, but you just cannot get thrown out on a ball in the dirt when you should have had that bag easily.
Terry, how are you feeling after this first part of this week?
Well, last week when we came on, it was the Royal Series, and Jason, you said, even though we won the series, it feels like a loss. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, it was still 2 out of 3 against a team that we didn't think we were going to win the series against. And but this week feels like a loss. I mean, Abreu bails you out when it was tied 2-2, and then Romy has a big inning, and it, you know, the bats just kept bailing out the pitching, and then it just falls apart, you know. And I kind of put this game more on Cora than anything, because if Chris Martin pitches the 8th, you're winning the game. But instead, it's Luis Garcia, who came from the American League West. The Texas Rangers have seen plenty of him. And he gives up a home run, and then another run comes in, and Winkowski gives up a 3-run bomb with 2 outs in the inning. Couldn't get out of it. Just a terrible way to end it. And the Royals had a bad series against the Tigers of all teams, but won today. The Mariners had a bad series as well. Or did I get that wrong? Maybe it was Seattle playing the Tigers. Who are the Royals playing? I forgot. But nonetheless, both the Mariners and the Royals were coming off a bad series. So if you could have just won one more game, you're only 1 out of the wild card, but you drop it. Now you got 4 against the Orioles starting Thursday. Then you got the Astros rematch in Houston this time. So just not good. And then Cam Boozer sent to the injured list due to elbow inflammation. Who knows if we'll see him again. I can check on Slayton here pretty quick to see if there's any developments with him. But you could get Hendricks back soon. I don't know. I mean, that should be a positive addition, but he is 36 years old, hasn't really pitched much over the last few years between his Tommy John and then his cancer battle. So we'll see what he ends up looking like. But not a good way to end the series on the verge of a tough week here.
Yeah, definitely not. And we don't know the status right now if, you know, whether or not Costas will rejoin the team this weekend. There were reports initially that he probably would, and then Cora sort of poured water on that today, saying, well, he still needs more time, so it's up to him, and we just have to be patient, which tells me that they want him back, but Costas is in no hurry, which unfortunately doesn't surprise me. So you don't know about him, and I know Trevor Story is taking batting practice, but he's at least a week or two. He's got to do a rehab assignment first, and who even knows if that's a positive to be adding to your lineup at this point. So they're in a weird spot. Again, it's like you lose games like this. Like you mentioned, you could have been that much closer to a wild card spot. Now you're just a little bit further back, and a lot of things are up in the air right now. So that loss really does kind of hurt. But we're not going to kill them too much. They did still win 2 out of 3. So we will proceed as normal. We will give you our top 5 players for this series. And Terry, you are in the leadoff spot. Go ahead. Who's number 5?
I am going with one of the most unlikely names that you have ever heard of. And before 3 days ago, we had never heard of him. And that is Mickey Gasper. And I think that's a really cool name. As I said on social media, That sounds like a name straight out of the 1920s. Like he was the fourth outfielder for the New York Yankees on the 1926 team or whatever. It's just a very old school name to a throwback era of baseball. And he got the call up because of the Duran suspension. And apparently that was an off day for the Woo Sox. So Gasper had gone out, got his hair cut, went to the supermarket because he needed to cook dinner that night. And then at 2:30 gets a call. Hey, head to Fenway Park. You're going to the big leagues. And he was only brought in a pinch hit situation. And it was kind of a key at bat. And it would have been epic had he gotten the walk-off, because it would have been probably literally the most out-of-nowhere walk-off of all time. He was picked in the Rule 5 draft. He spent several years in the Yankees system, and Breslow snagged him this year, as well as Slayton. And so he comes in, I think it was the 10th inning. It was extras. It ended up being the final inning of the game. And he was down 1-2 in the count and came back and worked a walk. And it was kind of critical because it was a lefty on the mound. And the next batter behind Gasper was Rob Refsnyder, who is a lefty killer. And so by getting the game to Refsnyder, that allowed the walk-off to happen. And the Red Sox end up winning that game 5-4, but I just thought it was really cool, and we might never talk about him again. There's speculation on whether or not, like you guys said, Tristan Casas gets called up tomorrow. If that happens, Gasper will most likely be sent down. Also, Tyler O'Neill could be activated at some point. That could also cause Gasper to get sent back down as well. But kind of a cool moment in game one. And it probably won't be a good thing if he stays on the roster, because other things will be out of whack. But if there's a reason for him to stay up, he's definitely going to be an at-bat I look forward to. I think in Worcester right now, he's got an on-base north of 400. And he is known for having very good plate appearances, plate discipline. So cool moment for him.
Nick?
You know, I don't have tons of information about the guy. I know he's got over 1,000 OPS in the minors this season. The only thing I worry about with him is he's a switch hitting catcher. And if we do have to DFA him to make a roster move to get Casas back off the 60-day IL or something like that, I don't want to see him go, because I think he will get snagged up by at least like 10 teams. There's not many teams that would pass up on a catcher who has 1,000 OPS in AAA and a switch hitter. I just don't see that happening. So I hope he stays with the organization and we can see more of him.
Yeah, I hope he stays too. I mean, he's had quite a journey to get here. 28 years old, kind of like another Jamie Westbrook type of situation where, you know, it took him a long time to really crack into the big leagues for the first time. And who knows? I mean, this might be, might be the last time we see him in the big leagues, or, you know, he might have a little bit of a future here. But that was an impressive first plate appearance. I mean, you fight that hard to get to the big leagues, your first plate appearance, to have the discipline to be able to draw a walk and work a walk in that situation instead of just going up there hacking away. You know, for a guy who is hitting really well down in the minor leagues right now, you imagine he probably wanted to swing the bat. He wanted that moment, but he stayed poised, drew the walk, and, you know, ended up facilitating the win that way. So definitely a cool moment for him. Like I said, no idea what his future holds. Feels like we have a little bit of a log jam at catcher. I know he can play first base as well, but we've got a log jam there too. So no idea what the future is. Might just be a one and done, but definitely a cool moment. And I agree with you, but like, just cool name and the mustache and everything. Like, it's just kind of an old school feel about him, which is really cool.
Just in response to Nick's comments, if they can keep him, I don't have the 40 man up in front of us, but you could DFA Dahlbeck, you could DFA that Trinanmen kid, or I forget what his name is. We have another backup catcher on there that could be DFA'd as well. So that's another way to do it.
You could also move Paxton to the 60-day IL. I know there is hope he could pitch again this season, but that is an option.
Oh, that ain't happening. Yeah, I get what you're saying, though. I think they're just saying that with Paxton to save face. Like, we made the dumbest trade ever. And, you know, so I don't know. But if you can hang on to Gasper until the end of the year, Jansen becomes a free agent, so he walks away. You can use him as a backup to Wong until Teal comes up. And all three of those guys just got promoted, by the way. So I don't know if any of them will have a shot. This is probably a topic for another show. But if they absolutely crush it and then they have a good spring training, I don't know if any of the big three have a shot to make the roster right away on opening day. But that, if Teal would be one of those guys, that could affect Gasper.
Yeah, and you know, and if you, like you said, if you can keep him, it kind of prevents you having to make a decision about Danny Jansen. You can just kind of let him walk and not have to spend the money. Not that he was going to break the bank, but still, that's money that you can be saving, which we know John Henry likes that. So,
and he could be a Dom Smith type guy next year if Casas, you know, has another freak injury.
Right. Yeah. So with that, we will move to number four on our top five list. Nick, who do we got coming in there?
So we got Sogard coming in at four. He had three hits this series. He had four RBIs. He was one of the biggest producers for this entire series. And he was one of the only guys that could actually catch the ball and throw the ball to first base while playing second base on this entire roster. We had so many errors today. Nick Sogard got hurt. Another error happened after that. And Nick Sogard is a decent piece for this team who could play a bunch of different positions, switch hitter. You know, he might never be a big time everyday player, but he's a guy that can go out there and put up a competitive at bat, catch and throw the ball. He's a good player, and I wouldn't be surprised if he sticks around for the next few years as our utility man. He's a decent player.
Terry.
You haven't really had a Brock Holt type guy since Brock Holt left. I mean, I think we had always hoped that Christian Arroyo could be that guy, but he could never stay on the field. Ironically, Sogard did leave the game with an injury. I can pull that up in a second to see if there's an update there. But at least against righties, he's pretty – or lefties, is it? I forget. But he's got splits and hits, you know, one side of the pitcher's mound better than the other. You've, like Nick said, you've been hurting so bad defensively, and he's been pretty solid, and he's come through for you in big moments. And it's just kind of cool when you call up a guy, you don't really have a ton of expectations, and then they really, really break out and start producing for you. We got him, I think, 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, rather. We traded Jeffrey Springs and Chris Mazza to the Rays for, is it Carlos Hernandez? I forget who he is. He was a catcher that we thought was going to be potentially, you know, a nice backup to Wong. And, or even at the time, I mean, Wong hadn't even broken out, so maybe they even thought he could be the guy for a while. But Sogard was in that deal. So, you know, he was drafted, I think, by Tampa, and really solid. Our middle of the infield has just been so unsettled for the past several years, as I've pointed out, especially second base. And even since Xander left, I mean, the Kike Hernandez experiment didn't go well. Trevor Story can't stay on the field. Christian Arroyo couldn't stay on the field. You've had a lot of issues up the middle, whether it's injury, whether it's you know, performance or defense. So it's nice to see a little bit of stability there.
Yeah, and that's exactly what he brings is stability. He's not a guy that, you know, he's not one of your top prospects. He's not really going to threaten for, you know, taking away one of the full-time positions. And that's not a knock on him. It's just he is the perfect sort of, you know, utility guy that you can put all around the infield, and he's going to give you competent defense, competent at-bats, and that's really all you can ask for a 26-year-old, you know, utility infielder. So he's been a good addition. I'm glad they finally called him up because he had been, you know, playing really well down in AAA. You know, I know they've tried different things with Valdez and Grissom, and I just think that Sogard is, you know, so much better defensively than those guys. And, you know, maybe Grissom's bat, once he finally figures it out, is better. And, you know, we'll see that, you know, time will tell on that one. But Sogard's bat isn't bad. He hits really well against lefties, and he's decent against righties, you know, as a switch hitter. So he's a good option for you off the bench. I like his story. You kind of traded for him. You thought that Hernandez kid was really going to be the prize of the deal. I don't think he really ever panned out. Sogard enters your system, plays really well, and he's kind of, you know, honestly giving me vibes of his cousin, Eric Sogard, who was a player that I always liked, you know, when he was with the Brewers and Oakland for a little bit. He's the guy that I always thought would be a great bench piece for the Red Sox when he was playing. So Nick has kind of taken up that mantle. He's here now, and he's doing a great job as sort of your utility guy. So another good series from him. And, you know, again, ride the hot hand. Keep giving him at bats, you know, especially if as long as he's not too hurt. You know, we'll see, you know, how that injury pans out. You know, got taken out of game three late. But if he's healthy and, you know, he's ready to go, then keep getting him bats because he's doing something out there.
It must be against righties that he's going to have to play against, because he does not have a hit so far at the major league level against a lefty. I thought I was on the minor league baseball reference, but I knew there was one side of the plate that he didn't hit particularly well against, so... We'll see. He's another guy, though, whose time is relatively short because Story coming back impacts him. You're getting Meyer at some point next year. Probably, I'm guessing, maybe June, July, somewhere in that neighborhood. They'll want to probably give him some reps before the trade deadline, because if things aren't going well for him, you're either going to have to go back to a guy like Sogard or perhaps pursue a rental type guy. It's a good thing we didn't get Renjifo, though, because he went down with a bad injury. I forget what it was, but I think he's going to miss the rest of the year. He was the other Angels player that we were connected to. But we'll see. Well, you'll take what you can get, and if you're clinging to the pipe dream that we could possibly get into October, a guy like Sogard will probably have something to say about that.
Yeah, for sure. So sticking with the offense, we'll move to number three on our top five, and that is going to be Connor Wong, who had another good offensive series, 3-for-9, had a huge home run in game two, an absolute missile that he launched into the monster. Might have been the fastest home run he's ever hit in terms of exit velocity this year. That thing was crushed. And again, he's just having another good, solid offensive and defensive year. He's shown his versatility by playing a little bit of first base here when the Red Sox have been shorthanded. So I think he's really increased his value with being able to do that as well. You saw him, you know, game three, the one you should have won, you know, going in as a pinch runner for Yoshida. I mean, that's just a small little thing that, like, he does have that speed. He's an athletic guy as a catcher, and he helps score that run. So, just all in all, another good series for him. And you've got to wonder, like, does he hear the footsteps coming? You know, Kyle Teal gets promoted to AAA. There's all these, you know, scouting guys all over Twitter saying that he's the most MLB ready of the three, that, you know, he could play in the MLB today and be, you know, successful and be a good catcher. So you got to wonder if Connor Wong's hearing the footsteps, because Danny Jansen gets traded for. So he's here now. Now, he's a free agent at the end of the year. And like we said, they might let him walk. But, you know, if you're Connor Wong, do you sort of look at it and go, yeah, I'm playing really well, but this Kyle Teal is on the way. They could always just re-sign this Jansen kid, and I might be trade bait in the offseason. You know, you got to wonder if those thoughts start to creep into his head a little bit. you know, he's a good player. He's 27, 28 years old, so still under 30. I think still has good years ahead of him. But, you know, the previous guy had no problem trading Christian Vasquez, you know, when things got a little bit rough. And, you know, Vasquez was a fan favorite as well. Now, he was a little bit more on the downslope than Wong is. I think Wong, like you said, he's, you know, he's right at his prime right now. But you got to wonder if that motivates him a little bit. And, hey, if that gets him to play his best baseball going forward, you know, into the second half, then, you know, by all means, do it. I think it's one of those iron sharpens iron kind of things. Like Kyle Teal is on his way and he's, you know, swinging a hot bat. Connor Wong doesn't want his position taken away, so he's going to start swinging a hot bat too. That's a good problem if you're the Red Sox to have, especially for a team trying to fight for the wild card right now. So very interested to see how Wong's second half goes. Obviously, you'd be keeping an eye on Kyle Teal as well, but Red Sox are in good shape at catcher, which they haven't, you know, they haven't really had that stability in a while. I mean, Christian Vasquez manned that position for a number of years, but he only had really 1.5 to maybe 2 like really good seasons. Otherwise, he was good. He was okay. He had the Tommy John thing. Then the defense slipped a little bit, and then the offense started to slip too. You know, now you're looking at a point where between Wong and Teal, you've got the next 5 to 7 years of catcher, at least, you know, sewn up and solidified. So it's a good position for them to be in. But obviously, Connor Wong still playing good baseball at the major league level. So he's the guy we're going to focus on. And hopefully this sparks a good second half for him. So, Terry, what are your thoughts on Connor Wong?
I'm a big fan of Connor Wong. He doesn't strike out a ton. He just gives you a really good at-bat. He comes through in the clutch pretty well. And I don't think he's thrilled about the prospects of being a backup catcher. And the interesting thing, too, is when the season started, if you guys remember, Alex Cora was telling the media that Reese McGuire was his guy. And he was getting the majority of the starts for the first few weeks. And then I think Wong just kind of broke out and had a hot bat. And you don't have many righties in the lineup. So I don't see how you put McGuire in there over Wong. But it'll be interesting to see what happens, because you know Scott Boras is going to be chirping the Red Sox front office if Kyle Teal isn't getting enough starts. So we'll see, but I think Connor Wong is a bona fide everyday catcher. I think he'll probably be a top 7 or 8 catcher in Major League Baseball for the next 4 to 5 years. And you mentioned Vasquez, and Vasquez was a good player in his time with us and, you know, really helped us in a lot of areas. But I think Connor Wong is going to have a longer career than Vasquez, or at least a longer prime, because Vasquez for the last couple of years has kind of broken down. You know, he's not nearly as athletic as Wong is. Like, Wong gets around that those base paths, like, you know, like not Duran or Hamilton, but not much further behind them. He's one of your fastest guys on the bases. So I'd like to see him be a little bit better defensively. I think he has improved in that area, but it was a big series for him. When he hit that 2-run shot, we were up 4-0. That put us up 6-0. It ended up being critical. It didn't seem so at the time. It put the game out of reach, but Crawford couldn't get that final out and loaded the bases. And then Boozer came in and then walked a couple. And before the inning was over, the Rangers had put up 4 runs. And actually, Lucas Sims ended up coming into the inning, and he was, I forget which Texas batter it was that he was up against. Maybe I can find it right here. Langford was up at the plate, and there was a ball on the lower outside corner. Clearly a ball, but it ended up being strike 3. Bailed the Red Sox out, rather, because that could have been a big inning. Bruce Bochy comes out, gets tossed. The Rangers never scored another run beyond that. So, and the Red Sox scored a few more, but for a minute, it was looking like it was a critical two-run bomb after all. I don't know what the exit velocity was, but it was a line drive right into the monster seats, like you said.
Nick?
My take on Wong is, and with Kyle Teal, I think as soon as Kyle Teal is in the major leagues, he's going to be the starter. I think Wong is either going to be traded, and I think he will have a lot of value this offseason, or they can move him to the everyday second baseman, or they can have him as some sort of utility guy where he hits he plays first base against tough lefties. He plays second base a lot. He also catches sometimes. So I think they're going to make a decision soon, because I think Kyle Teal by midsummer next year, he's going to be the everyday catcher. And it kind of stinks for Wong, because he's done enough to start for this team. And he probably should start for this team until Kyle Teal shows he's better. But I think they've invested so much into these three prospects. Some say now four, but these top three at least, they're going to give them the everyday chance for as long as they can.
Yeah, and hey, if he keeps playing like this and increases his trade value and helps you get, you know, a top line starting pitcher, you know, this winter or something, or maybe next year's deadline, I'm all for it. Yeah, you know? And he's helping you win games, so that's even more important too.
So Wong has 4 years left beyond this, so that's a lot of control. So that should net you a pretty good trade package. A couple of prospects, maybe even a major leaguer on another roster. You could probably get a key reliever for him, maybe an eighth inning guy. You're losing Martin and Jansen at the end of the year, so there's gonna hopefully be some moves here. And I'm not a Breslow guy, as I've been saying ad nauseum since the trade deadline. So it's going to be a challenging winter for him, but Wong could net you a huge haul. But let me ask you guys this. If Kyle Teal was not in your system, Connor Wong is essentially untouchable, isn't he?
I mean, I think for sure. He's under 30 years old. Like you said, he's got years of control left. He's athletic enough that I don't think you have to worry about him breaking down the way like Vasquez did. I think he'd still be a really productive player for you even into his 30s. So, yeah, if they didn't draft Kyle Teal where they did and he wasn't rocketing his way through the system like he is, then yeah, Connor Wong, I mean, it would take a king's ransom for me to consider moving him. And I'm not saying the catcher is like a really important position, but when you have good catching, it just propels you that much more forward. So yeah, I agree. He'd be borderline untouchable to me. Nick, what do you think?
The reason why I think he would be untouchable is because when you think about free agency and catchers, when's the last time a big name catcher went to free agency? If you think about all the big time catchers in the last 10, 15 years, JT Realmuto signed an extension with the Phillies. Salvador Perez has signed extensions with the Royals. Yadier Molina has played with the same team his whole career. Buster Posey played for the same team his whole career. Joe Mauer played for the same team his whole career. There's not many times a catcher, a really good catcher, goes to free agency that you can actually sign in the free agent market. So once you develop one, it's good to sign them, or you know, there's no way to replace them unless you have one coming up in your farm system.
It's an excellent point.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. The last big name free agent catcher that signed somewhere else was Wilson Contreras when he went from the Cubs to the Cardinals. And how's that working out for St. Louis? He hasn't exactly been worth the money since he got there. So sometimes it's, you know, you go out and get those big name free agent catchers and they fall apart as soon as they get to you. So yeah, it's a fair point. And usually that doesn't happen. So interesting to see what happens there.
Can you imagine if we signed Vasquez? Because you know how this fan base is. They don't like getting rid of anybody, you know? And if you signed him, just think of the lack of production you could have there. But instead, fortunately for now, you have Connor Wong.
Yep, absolutely. So sticking with the offense again, moving to number two on our top five list, Terry, who do we got?
I keep getting stuck with my favorite player, and I mean that sarcastically. I think he might be Jeremy's legitimate favorite player, but Masataki Yoshida just continues to go on an absolute tear. In the last 30 games, he's hitting 15 with a 391 on base, five home runs in that time. Just missed one today in the finale. It ended up bouncing off the monster. But and that would have been opposite field for him, which doesn't happen too often. But just another at bat. I mean, he's the furthest thing from an automatic out at this point, and he's not hitting into double plays as much as he used to. Just an all around good plate appearance. I mean, he might be the hottest hitter on the team right now. I mean, it's definitely not Devers. Duran has, without looking, seems to have cooled off a little bit as of late. And just looking up the roster here, Hamilton has definitely cooled off as of late. He was 2-for-11 in the series. I think he drove in a run today, if I'm not mistaken. But your hottest hitter on the team, and I hope that there's a way to move this guy at the end of the year. And the only way for that to happen is if he sustains this for the remaining 6 weeks of the season. So he would be a DH. I don't know if any other team would want to take a chance on him in the outfield. The Red Sox don't seem to want to do it. We have a massive surplus of outfielders anyway, but he wasn't terrible in the outfield. I mean, we've seen worse. So I hope there's a way to move him. If a team would take on the whole contract, I would give him away for basically a bag of baseballs. But you'll probably have to throw in some money. But he is increasing his value, in the last couple of months. And all the projections coming into his first year was that he would be a 300 hitter with a pretty high on base. So like I said, in the last month, 315 with a 391. Slugging 505, by the way, in that time frame. So and then look at this, 17 strikeouts in 111 at bats in that time. That's low. That's probably one of the lowest on the team. So he's been phenomenal. I hope it continues, because I don't want him on the roster next year. He can't hit lefties, and you're going to need DH to hopefully put a righty in there, give Casas, a breather or whatnot. So we'll see, but best offensive player this series by far.
Nick.
I'm not a huge Yoshida fan, honestly, too, but you can't deny how good he's been the last month and a half. He's been kind of carrying this team, batting third most days. He's still not hitting lefties very well, but every time you look at the box score, he's got two hits, or it's usually three singles and no RBIs, but the guy's getting on base. He's doing his job. And at this point, I know he's increasing his trade value, but I still don't think you can get very much for him or anything at all. I think the best thing you can do is probably eat a little bit of the contract and, get a mid to a lower level prospect and see what happens, and just hope to get some of his money off the books. Cause unless he hits 400 for the next month and a half for the rest of the year, I don't think he's going to be moved for anything significant. So I hope he keeps continuing to play well and we get the most out of him we can, but he just doesn't fit the roster.
Yeah. And it's tough because he doesn't fit a ton of rosters out there, including this one, because this offseason, he'll be 30, which isn't terrible, but, he's a 30-year-old who is shaky defensively, doesn't run very well, and doesn't hit for a ton of power, and can't hit lefties. So there's only a select few teams out there that would really be interested, and he would be like a bottom-of-the-order piece, if they wanted him. But then you got to get them to take on the contract, which a lot of teams wouldn't want to do. So then you're looking at, do you want to eat some money just to get rid of him, or would you rather try to just, like Terry said, dump the whole contract for, a bag of used baseballs? It's a shame because I liked him when he got here. I actually liked the signing, when it happened. I thought, he doesn't need to be a big power guy. If he can be, 15 homers, hit, over 300, get on base a ton, I did think that he was a better athlete before he got here. And then I saw him and I'm like, yeah, he's not awful defensively, but man, he can't run. And that was the one thing, like, this series, like, he needs to realize his own speed. And by that, I mean the limitations of his own speed, because him trying to stretch that double, I believe it was game one or game two, tried to stretch a wall ball, you know, into a double, and he was out by a mile. So he's certainly not quick, but he's super hot with the bat right now. So all in all, it's a huge positive, because you are still missing pieces in this lineup. So you need Yoshida to stay hot and keep doing what he's doing. He's driving in runs too. And that, you know, he's doing it with guys on base, you know, in scoring position. So that's really important. At this point, I've given up on the whole, you know, is the power ever really going to be there? I don't think so. I just don't think that's who he is. At times he shows that, you know, that pop. I mean, you know, the hit off the wall was a good one. He had another deep fly to center that maybe a different time of year, maybe, you know, if it was a little hotter up here, it might've gone all the way out. But he does show that he does put a good swing on the ball, but this is just who he is. He's kind of just a, you know, around 300 hitter, not a ton of power, can hit doubles, but, you know, otherwise it's a lot of just line drive singles, and, but he doesn't strike out. So he's really an interesting player, because there's not a ton of, like, you know, flashy stuff with him. You know, he's, again, defensively, he's not much. There's not great speed, not a ton of power, but you look at his numbers and they're all good. And he's, you know, red hot so far, you know, the second half of the season. So it's just a weird spot, because he's still kind of an odd fit for the roster. The contract is still a little bit of a bugaboo, but he's red hot right now. So for now, because you're stuck with him anyway, I'll take it. I hope it keeps up. I hope he, you know, rides it out through the remainder of the season. And then maybe in the off season, some stupid team, you know, as I always say on the show, it all it takes is one stupid team. You know, they call up Brezel and say, hey, you know what? We'll take him. Yeah, we'll take him. No, you don't have to pay any of the contract, and we'll even give you something back, because we like what we saw and we really want to, you know, have him on our team. Great. By all means, do it. But for now, just keep him in the lineup and hopefully he keeps producing, because unfortunately the offense is just about the only reason you're winning a ton of games right now. So I'm all for it.
If you remember, we got Adam Ottavino essentially for free, and the Yankees gave us Frank Herman, who obviously never, well, he did get called up, but it was brief and not pretty, but there is a precedent of that happening. And you look at the Dodgers and think, well, they got Yamamoto, they have Ohtani. The only way they could take Yoshida is if they committed to starting him in the outfield, because Ohtani would DH. But he does only have 3 years left on the deal. So it's not like a Xander Bogart situation where he's got 9 years left on the deal after this, and it's just ugly across the board, just completely unsustainable. So that gives me a little bit of hope that perhaps something can be done. And maybe it happens late in the winter. Maybe another team just isn't happy with how the market played out. Maybe that team missed some opportunities to sign some players. And then Yoshida becomes a more viable option at that point.
Yeah, one can only hope. And you know, that's true. I mean, only having 3 years left, you know, that does help a little bit, because if, you know, if he was signed for another 5 or 6, it's forget about it. But there is a slight window open because of that. So hopefully someone decides to take a bite on that. So we will wrap this up with number one on our top five list. It wasn't all the offense in this series. There was one guy who stood out. So Nick, go ahead. Who is number one on our list?
Number one is Brian Baio. I think he had his best start of at least the second half, and definitely his best start in a while. He went 6 innings, 1 earned run, 5 Ks. The one downside was he did walk 3, and that's his biggest issue at the moment. He kind of gets behind the counts and then gets crushed and throws the fastball right down the middle. But if he limits the walks, he's going to be good in this league. He got his ERA under 5. He might not be an ace. He might not be a 2. But if he could be a 3 guy with a 3.8 ERA, 3.7 ERA, I'll take that from him. It's just, you got to limit the walks. You got to throw more strikes, and he's got to mature a little bit. You know, he's still throwing up his hands when there's an error, or he's just doing kind of stupid things you know, things that, you know, a high schooler would do. But he's getting better. He's been better the last three or four outings. You know, he has that one inning that he kind of – he was cruising, and I think the fifth inning he kind of got in there and got – started walking a few guys and gave up his run. But he is improving, but it's just not quick enough.
Terry.
Well, unfortunately, the bar is pretty low based on how some of these guys have pitched lately. And I would say that Bayo is probably your best pitcher in the last month or so without looking. And the strikeouts have ticked up. I mean, in four of his last five starts, he's struck out at least five or six. He has 2-7 strikeout performances, which you would take every time. For a guy who has the velocity he has, I don't know if anybody else throws harder. Maybe Houck. Oh, well, Pivetta could too if he's healthy. Pivetta can get his fastball up there. But Bayo, you know, will hit 97, 98. So I've always said, you know, he's got the velocity to punch guys out. But with Andrew Bailey becoming the new pitching coach and the mindset, you know, shifting to off-speed stuff, sweepers, change-ups, which Bayo has always had a great change-up, you know, you just don't see a focus on the four-seamer as much. But he's been your best starter every time out in, for the last month, and my confidence is rising, and you need to see him finish the year off good. If you're gonna feel okay about next year's rotation, he has to figure it out.
I mean, that's the thing. It's not just this year. It's looking to 2025, where your rotation at the moment, if assuming they don't make any moves, your rotation is Houck, Crawford, Bayo, Giolito, Whitlock. Now, you know, we can debate all that later because I don't want Whitlock anywhere near that rotation, but Bayo is in there. He's solidified as your number three, maybe number two starter. So the development still has to happen, right? Like it can't just be, you know, one good start and then he gives up seven earned runs in two innings the next start and he's, you know, throwing his hands up like Nick said and, you know, acting like a teenager out there. And it's tough because he's still 24, maybe he just turned 25, I'm not sure, but he's still young. And the thing that I always remind myself of is growth is not linear. So, you know, he might just, it might just be something where it clicks in the off season and he comes into 2025 and he pitches like a beast. You know, maybe he kind of does some, you know, looking inside, you know, a little bit and kind of matures over the off season and says, okay, you know what? I need to be tougher out there on the mound. I've got the stuff. I just need to, you know, nail it down. It may be something like that. It may not happen overnight. And it may not even happen over the string of the next 3 to 4 starts. He might go out there the rest of the year and dominate. And, you know, you could say he's still not all the way where you need him to be. So it's just one of those things that, like, you deal with it with a young pitcher. He's still kind of figuring himself out. This is his first year working with Bailey. So, you know, maybe they're still kind of figuring out how to work with each other. And, you know, that might take time. So right now he is pitching pretty well, though. I mean, this last start was a good one. You know, again, he sort of lost it towards the end there, but that's okay. He's, you know, he's not going out there getting his lips ripped off like he was, you know, a couple months ago. So I would like to see the punch outs increase a little bit. I don't want him to just be a sinker ball, ground ball guy, because I think he's just, his stuff is too good for that. And yeah, there's still going to be some growing pains, even though he's been in the league a couple of years now, even though you signed him to the extension, he's still young. And fans need to remember that, you know, if he does get lit up, yes, it's frustrating. And yeah, like if he's, you know, kind of doing it to himself and getting frustrated out there, you can rip him for it. But it's just one of those things, you know, he still has a lot to learn and he still has a lot of maturing to do. So hopefully he finishes out the year strong and he helps you get into a wild card race. And maybe again, like maybe something clicks. If not, you got to hope that this off season he gets together with Andrew Bailey. Maybe he, you know, goes to one of these pitching facilities or whatever in the winter and kind of figure some stuff out and comes back stronger next year. But so far, at least from what we've seen, second half, not terrible. And if he can have a really good September, I think that'll do a lot for his confidence heading into the offseason.
He's essentially on par with Haukan Crawford when it comes to strikeouts, because Bale has 114 strikeouts, Hauk 127, Crawford 129. And the difference is Bale has had two less starts. So give him those two starts, he's right up there with them. So, you know, we've talked about Andrew Bailey a lot recently. And I think what's going on here is he's got his own program, and they seem to want it to be a one-size-fits-all type program, but I don't think you can do that. You have to identify individually what each one of these guys is good at and how they can get their outs. And so I think that's messed with Pivetta at times. I certainly think it's messed with Bayo. And at some point tomorrow or the next day, I'll put it on social media, but there is a rash of either forearm or elbow problems with this team. I mean, Giolito and Chris Murphy right out of the gates didn't even make it to opening day. Justin Slayton, Nick Pivetta is not on the injured list, but had some forearm fatigue. He also had a forearm strain earlier in the year. Just going down the list here, Slayton, elbow inflammation, Cam Boozer, elbow inflammation. Chris Martin has dealt with elbow inflammation. Garrett Whitlock has had Tommy John surgery. I think that's about it, but that's a lot. We're not a team that really has a history of elbow problems. Chris Sale had Tommy John a few years ago, but I mean, who else has there been? Bayo, I did miss about a month last year due to some inflammation in spring training, but I don't know. I mean, Andrew Bailey isn't going anywhere, but I think there's a lot to be concerned about with his mindset on what this pitching staff should do in terms of preparation and performance.
Yeah, and obviously it's his first year here, so, you know, it's new for everybody involved. Hopefully, you know, the offseason, you know, they get a little more on track and they kind of see eye to eye a little bit more, and maybe the pitchers get more used to what he's doing, and, you know, we don't have as many flare-ups as we've had. But, yeah, it's definitely a difference. And, you know, you see a guy like Nick Pivetta who never went on the IL, you know, for so many years. Now, you know, he's missing time. You're having to skip starts. He was on the IL for the first time this season. So it's concerning. And, you know, a lot of that could be just mileage. Nick Pivetta is in his, you know, he's approaching his mid-30s. He's been pitching, you know, years, back-to-back years of 30-plus starts for, you know, like 3 or 4 years in a row. So it could be a mileage thing. Same with Cutter Crawford. He's never pitched this much before. Could just be that he's fatigued. But I certainly hope that that's all it is, and that, you know, Bailey's not out here breaking our pitchers, because what you don't want to be in any case, but certainly in the pitching case, you don't want to be the Tampa Bay Rays, where you just, you know, you get as much out of these pitchers as you can, and then eventually you just break them before they even turn 30 years old, and you just kind of recycle them and go on to the next thing, because that'd be a horrible way to run it. So hopefully it's deeper than that, but only time will tell. So with that, we will wrap up this episode. Keep an eye out for another edition of Clown Takes coming your way this weekend. We've got a high-profile target this time. So someone who definitely made some waves on Red Sox Twitter earlier this week. So we will be doing that. And then the weekend crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap the Baltimore Orioles series. Huge four-game set coming up this weekend in Baltimore. So everyone have a good weekend, and we will talk to you all later. Take care.